Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Roy Scott Cooper, urologist at UPMC Hammett. Dr. Cooper, thank you so much for being our guest on this month's edition of Business Spotlight with UPMC Hammett. Before we jump in and discuss our primary topic, tell our listeners about your background and what led you to UPMC Hammett.
I grew up just outside of Pittsburgh, PA. I went to a small high school with like 90 kids. I went to Pitt, Johnstown for my undergrad, and then I found my way into the lab, and the first lab that I worked at was actually when Hammett was going through the transition to University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Hammett. It's there where I was able to find the motivation to go to medical school. I applied to the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, where I got the excellent foundation, and I met my lifelong mentor, Dr. Justine Schober, who's a pediatric urologist and now my partner. So through her, I was able to do some great research, you know, at Rockefeller University. I was able to be exposed to some of the greatest minds in the industry, and I fell in love with urology. I went to my residency at the Detroit Medical Center in Detroit, Michigan, and then I did my fellowship in advanced urologic oncology with robotics at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Institute in Buffalo. I came back to Erie, PA, because, you know, I had been familiar with the hospital when I worked there in the lab. And obviously, Dr. Schober made a great case to be her partner, and you can't really turn that down. But aside from the personal reasons, I think that the patients in Erie, Pennsylvania may have had a limited option as far as cancer is concerned. So, you know, you have a big center in Cleveland, you have a big center in Buffalo, and you have a big center in Pittsburgh. And that kind of displaces a lot of people. And, you know, I really felt that it was an area of need, and I felt it was an area where I could be a benefit to people so they don't have to be displaced to get, you know, their cancer care. That's why I came to Erie and Hammett and hope to make a career out of it.
And what you just mentioned, Dr. Cooper, is very important because UPMC Hammett has now dispelled the myth that you need to travel to the surrounding larger markets for quality cancer care, haven't they?
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, there's a lot of what they call young blood coming in. They hired a new great colorectal guy that he and I have done surgeries together that I don't think could have been done before. And we also hired a new radiation oncologist that maybe later on in this interview we'll touch on, that he and I are bringing some stuff to Hammett to bring kind of the gold standard to Erie, PA.
Doctor, I know you specialize in the treatment of complex urologic cancers using robotic surgery. Can you begin by telling us the wide range of ailments you treat from the basic to the more severe, and also describe what robotic surgery is for those that may not know?
Absolutely. So I'm able to work on all parts of the urinary tract, from taking out the inside of the prostate to helping someone pee better, to taking out the whole bladder and reconstructing a lower urinary tract. So that's everything from low urinary tract symptoms to advanced pelvic malignancies. Again, like I said, with the new colorectal surgeon, I'm also able to do advanced cases like locally advanced cancers. We've done a case that this cancer was invading almost everything but the patient's pelvic sidewall. We were able to take out. We're able to do prostatectomies, which is taking out the whole prostate after radiation, which is a more difficult procedure. So we're really able to offer that wide range of oncology care. As far as the robot's just a fancy knife. It allows me to get in places that I normally wouldn't be able to get and see them. Sometimes in pelvic surgery, I know people probably don't want to hear this, but you feel your way around, you close your eyes, and you find what you're looking for, and you pull it out. And that can be dangerous. And what the robot does is it allows you to visualize these structures. It gives you an unlimited amount of angles and the precision to take it out safely. For example, I trained also in open prostatectomies, and we would lose around 1,700 cc's of blood, which is a lot of blood, okay? In robotic surgery, we lose around 150 to 200 cc's of blood. So it really gives us that advantage. It also helps with pain control. It also helps for prostate cancer to achieve erections more naturally and faster. It also helps with our continence or our leakage after surgery to bring that back naturally and faster. So there's a lot of advantages to the fancy knife, but just like anything else, you have to know when it's applicable, and patient selection is the biggest part of that tool.
You just alluded to it a little bit in that answer, Dr. Cooper, but you also specialize in sexual health issues. Again, describe the range of sexual health ailments you treat, ranging from the basic to the more severe.
Yeah, so, you know, when you start off basic, it's just kind of that loss of libido or the lack of urge to engage in intercourse, whatever that may mean to you, to erectile function, to obtaining and maintaining an erection, and interaction with your partner. And I think that's the greatest thing in practicing medicine in 2021 is that men can talk about their feelings. And I'm here to listen about your feelings. And we're able to do everything to the need of the individual, meaning, you know, erectile function and sexual health is a quality of life issue. It's a mental health issue. And, you know, when it's lacking, it can really be detrimental to the man and their relationship. And then to be able to restore that, you are able to give that person and their partner a wide range of options, from a pill to an injection to a pump or to surgery, and allow them to choose what is best for them. And I think that's, you know, I really try to foster that in my practice, is just kind of let me be a sounding board for your issues, and then we'll figure out a path and we'll choose which one you want to walk down it.
When it comes to the demographics of prostate health, older men seem to be less inclined to discuss the issue with their doctor. How do you address that issue?
So first, you know, any issue that deals with incontinence or intercourse is going to be a little sensitive for someone to talk about. But the reason that I wouldn't push it off is because, number one, you know, talk to somebody, talk to your family medicine, you talk to your friend, but, you know, you should get to the doctor, because it could be an underlying sign of something else going on. You know, sometimes difficulty with urination can just be an enlarged prostate. Sometimes it can be more than that. Sometimes irritative symptoms such as going to the bathroom too often or not being able to hold the urine can just be overactive bladder. But sometimes, you know, if you have a history of smoking, or as we know, there's a lot of industry in the area, that can be a harbinger of bladder cancer. And so you can't just brush these things off as, well, you know, it doesn't really hurt me now, or it's never been a problem before. Why isn't it an issue now? I think the greatest thing too, again, I'll circle back to it, is you can talk about your feelings. You're allowed to have an opinion on your health as a man, and you shouldn't have to carry that burden of worry. You should be able to go to your physician or advanced practitioner or whoever you like to deal with and say, hey, this is what I think is a problem. Is it a problem or not? And then we're able to use our expertise, help you out, and you can go on living your life. You know, you don't have to carry that worry with you at all.
Sticking with the theme of demographics, what age range do males have to worry about prostate health issues?
So with the prostate issue, we'll kind of focus more on prostate cancer and screening. So there's a variety of guidelines from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network to the American Urological Association, the task force. Those are probably the top three guidelines that are used nationwide. And it's all based on risk. You can start as early as 40 years old if you have a family risk of cancer, if you have African heritage, if you have any multiple family members at younger age with various cancers. You know, you might need to start screening with your PSA a little earlier. If you're at average risk, depending on the guideline, 45 to 55 years old, up to 75 years old. And again, that's a good reason to go talk to your doctor to say, like, hey, am I at risk for anything? Do I have to worry about it? And should I start getting screened, especially for prostate cancer?
Dr. Cooper, you've mentioned some of the symptoms of experiencing issues with your prostate. When is it time for a patient to seek out a urologist?
So it's time to go to the urologist when things are refractory, when the first plan isn't working. So you go to your primary care and you have some trouble going to the bathroom, and they put you on a pill and it doesn't work. You go to your primary care with decreased libido, they replace your testosterone, and it's not working. You go to your primary care, and they find that you have an elevated PSA that's persistently elevated. Those are the three main issues for men's sexual health and prostate specifically to come talk to a urologist.
So let's say a patient has just found out that they have elevated PSA levels. Walk us through the treatment options and the industry-leading technology to treat that available at UPMC Hammett.
Absolutely. I think that's a great question because that's pretty much a hot-button issue in not only the urology world, but you know the world in general. You know, in the 80s, it started out that they wanted to find everything and treat everything, and they were over-treating everybody. And then it came to find everything and treat some. And now we're at find some and treat some. And what that means is everything is risk stratified, as we talked about. First of all, if someone has an elevated PSA based on where it's at, you don't have to screen it every year. You don't have to repeat it every year. The worrisome ones are, you know, if you're over 3 or 4, then you have to perform a digital rectal exam. It's every man's favorite thing. I always get a chuckle. You wouldn't believe some of the stories that people would tell me in the office. The number one is, you know, you're not going to buy me a drink first, but you try to break the ice, but it is serious because if you have an abnormal digital rectal exam with a PSA over 4, then, you know, that increases your odds of having prostate cancer. So instead of just jumping right to biopsy as we did in the past, the first thing we do with an elevated PSA is make sure it's truly elevated. That's when those things like lower urinary tract symptoms, enlarged prostate, prostatitis, overactive bladder, even non-urologic things such as dental disease, diverticular disease, trauma, increased intercourse around the time of your PSA being drawn, those can all falsely elevate the PSA. And I think it's, you know, it's a big part of my training at Roswell that was drilled into me to never be reflexive. Don't be reactive. You know, use your training, use the data to drive you. And the first thing to do is just confirm that you have an elevated PSA. Next, moving forward, there's a lot of data now that says, you know, you should get a multiparametric MRI, which means more than one view from that MRI. And we have a 3T MRI here at Hammett, which is the best MRI you can get for the prostate. We have dedicated radiologists that can read it, which is a very important thing. And we just got a fusion biopsy, which means that if someone has an elevated PSA, I don't jump right to a biopsy. I actually get an MRI first to see if they can give me a roadmap to go after a targeted lesion. So if someone has to undergo a biopsy, there's a higher yield that I will diagnose clinically significant cancer, meaning a cancer that we would have to treat. The other thing we can do is if the MRI doesn't show a serious lesion of PI-RADS 4 or 5, and just for the sake of time, I'll just say 4 and 5 are serious and the rest of them aren't really worried about. We have genomic testing. We have markers that we can use to further say, hey, it's safe to keep on watching this PSA, even though it's going up. And we can safely avoid biopsying many men. About 27 to 35% of men can avoid a biopsy this way without being reflexive. And it doesn't change their life expectancy or their malignancy. So next, let's say someone has a PSA, an abnormal rectal exam. I get the MRI. It's got a PI-RADS 5 lesion. We're able to do that fusion biopsy, which we have done, which just came to UPMC Hammett. We find cancer. Now, the thing is, too, because we're screening for the cancers, you know, a lot of guys, I try to say the word cancer 1,000 times when I talk to patients, so it normalizes it. A lot of prostate cancer that's diagnosed, you don't have to treat. You can just watch it safely. It's called active surveillance. You know, these patients are my favorite patients because they have cancer, but they come back to the office every 6 months. We just have a little chat. We follow the PSA and we continue the risk assessment, and they're happy that they don't have to undergo active treatment, meaning surgery or radiation. Now, if you move into a more serious type of cancer, an intermediate risk prostate cancer, the first thing that you do is you risk stratify them. You say, okay, how long are you going to live? And I tell patients this very frankly. I say, based on the Social Security guidelines, you're expected to live X amount of years. I think you're going to live more or less because of your health. And that's how you make a decision. You make a decision based on someone's life expectancy, not necessarily just an age. And then you can offer them radiation or surgery. Those are the two main modalities. And like I said, we just got a brand new radiation oncologist here. He's great. If you do elect surgery, that's what we do, is we do the robotic prostatectomy. At Roswell, I learned how to do a bladder neck spare and a urethral spare to improve the time to continence so you don't leak as much. And I also learned how to do nerve sparing. So when it's safe, you can say, hey, you know, like, we can peel these nerves off. These are the layers we're going to take off. These are your percentages that you could have cancer there. And, you know, we can get men cancer free and maintain their quality of life with continence and erectile function with good certainty. And I give everyone the statistics. I give it, it's just calculators. You just plug the numbers in. The other thing is we talk about the complications, the big ones being leakage and erectile dysfunction. So those are the big ones for surgery. I won't step on anyone's toes with radiation, but I would also like to say, if the patient does elect radiation, we have a great radiation oncologist, and he and I together brought Spacor, which is a polyacrylamide gel that goes between the rectum and the prostate, and that before you get radiation therapy. And when you get the Spacor done, that limits the scatter of the radiation in the pelvis, and it decreases the amount of rectal side effects. So that's something new, just like the MRI fusion that was brought to UPMC Hammond. And then afterwards, what you do is, for surgery, they stay in the hospital a day. They come back and see me 10 days, catheter comes out. And then we just get a PSA in 6 to 8 weeks, and we follow that PSA for 6 months for 5 years. And the nice thing about prostate cancer is it's a lot of the time it's a curative disease. So it's really cool to see patients happy when they're disease-free. You know, they come back and they're just waiting for that PSA value. And when you tell them it's undetectable, it's a really special thing.
Doctor, it sounds like your Roswell education was an integral part of your career. On a personal note, I was just discussing this with our general manager, Joe Martin, the other day. He was telling me a story about how his father was diagnosed with adrenal gland cancer in the early 90s. There is a staunch difference in available treatments now compared to then. But still, taking that first step and reaching out to a physician early in the game is so crucial, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I can't thank Roswell enough for what they've taught me. I wouldn't be near the surgeon I am today, but just like that for the adrenal cancer, you know, normally to take adrenal cancer out, you know, we would make a big incision through the ribs, go through the chest, mobilize, you know, whatever organ is around it. Sometimes you have to take them out together. You know, historically, adrenal surgery is all open surgery. After being at Roswell, we can do that robotically as well. You know, anything, basically anything in the abdomen, you can do robotically. And, you know, Dr. Bridge is one of my partners. He's really great, too. It's nice to have him around just as a second pair of eyes and just to kind of guide me, because, you know, he's been doing it for quite some time. So I have a couple tips and tricks, but it's always nice to have the expertise close by. So I think that's another thing that, you know, UPMC Hammond has, is we have kind of the gambit, that, you know, a newer guy, a guy in the middle that can do pretty much everything. And then, you know, then Dr. Bridges is there to make sure that everything is okay, everyone's doing the right thing and making the safest choice for the patient.
Let's circle back to the sexual health topic. Older males can experience a loss in sexual drive. Can you explain why, and when is it time to contact somebody like yourself?
Yeah, the biggest thing is low testosterone. I mean, you see it on commercials, you hear it from your friends, you know, it's that fatigue, mental sluggishness, loss of sex drive, and just all in all not feeling yourself. You know, there's a lot of data that says that that can be helped with testosterone supplementation. But the biggest thing is, when you start to feel that kind of stuff and it doesn't go away, and maybe your partner or your buddy is saying like, hey, you know, it's more than just you're not getting enough sleep, you really should go talk to a doctor, because there could be something wrong with your heart. There could be something wrong with your just peripheral vasculature in general. And once we rule those things out, then we can start treating the low testosterone and hopefully, you know, reinvigorate you to become the man that you believe you are. And when you make it to the urologist, we kind of take it to the next level, because we're able to to help more with the erectile function. And a lot of times that's what guys want to talk about anyways. The low libido or like, hey, I'm just feeling tired is just a segue into I need help with my erections and I don't want to talk about it. And so, you know, you have a 3-minute conversation and you really know why the guy's there. And all I do is I just give him a pamphlet. It gives you the 5 ways that we can help with erections. And I have people come back. The one thing that I love about Erie, Pennsylvania and our patients is that they're an informed and educated public. And even if some people are not formally educated, they're very intelligent and they always want to learn more. They always want to read more. They say, what can I read about? How do I know? You know, and I say, look, you don't have to trust me. Here's the data. Here's what it is. If that's something that you want to do, come back. I'm your man. I'll help you out. And I find that that really down-to-earth approach really works in Erie, Pennsylvania, because they don't need to be told what to do. They just have a problem and they want it fixed. And, you know, it's great that they have the ambition and the motivation to read about things for themselves. And sometimes, I mean, people grill you. They'll come back and they'll say, how many of these have you done on Tuesday? You know, I'm like, all right, good question. But I think the biggest thing, you know, that ultimately it will end up in is the penile prosthesis. And I think it's kind of standoffish for a lot of people. It's interesting to talk about. Sometimes I get questions from patients say, well, how do I talk to my family about this? And I say, you don't have to talk to your family about this. What? Just let them know you're having surgery, you know. Talk to your spouse or your partner about it. But, you know, it's to your comfort level. The penile prosthesis is really, for most men, going to be the end all when the oral medications don't work because, you know, you have maybe bad diabetes or bad peripheral vascular disease. Those medications aren't going to work. If you don't want to use an injection or a device, you know, the penile prosthesis is a quick surgery. It's overnight in the hospital. You're able to maintain an erection satisfactory for intercourse. And I think the greatest thing too is you're able to maintain it until you and your partner are satisfied. And then you can deflate the prosthesis and then move on from there. The patient and partner satisfaction is very high with the penile prosthesis. And once patients get over the fact that it's kind of a mechanical implement, they're very happy with it.
What preventative measures can an individual take to have not only a healthy prostate, but maintain a healthy sex drive?
You know, it's odd to say it, but I always say, if you do what your mom told you, you'd be all right. So just keeping active, keeping your blood flowing everywhere is going to keep your blood flowing. Eating a healthy diet, not smoking, alcohol in moderation, all of these things are going to keep your vasculature healthy enough for the rest of your life. Also, you know, when you stay healthy and active, you start to know your body and you know when your symptoms are different. You know when it's just not a backache. You know when it's just not you're going to the bathroom too much. And that kind of hits on a theme that you and I have been talking about for the last half an hour, is when to go to the doctor. And the best thing you can do for your health, your prostate health and your sexual health, is once you're taking care of yourself and eating right and exercising and not smoking, you know, like, know your body. And then if your symptoms come up, you got to come talk to us. And that's the best thing you can do, because we can differentiate if it's something serious or if it's not. And then we can help you just live the quality of life that you want to live.
Is there any other information that our listeners should know about when it comes to prostate or sexual health that we didn't get an opportunity to discuss?
Oh, you know, the one thing that I didn't bring up is Peyronie's disease, and that's the curvature of the penis with an erection. That can be a little more difficult for patients to talk about, because for some reason they think it's a more abnormal, but it's actually very common. So if someone has an erection that's painful, or they have an erection that's curved, there's a lot we can do in our office to help out with that, from topical medications, injections, and again, surgery. So there's a wide gambit of available techniques to improve that. And that's something that I just want everyone to know, that it's fairly common. It's something that we deal with on a daily basis. And more importantly, it's correctable. So I think that would be very important. Thank you for asking that question.
Dr. Cooper, we really appreciate your time on Business Spotlight today and for all the terrific information that you gave about prostate health, sexual health, and also complex urologic cancers. if a listener was moved to take action today that may have a troubled prostate or another issue, how can they best reach out to you?
Most of the time, they do not need a referral, especially if it's a prostate-specific issue or a erectile issue. It's a lot easier for cancer since I'm a cancer surgeon, but just call the office. That's 814-877-5700. That's Lakeview Urology. We're right there on Peach Street by the hospital. My practice manager is doing a lot. We're actually doing a lot more office hours to make sure that we can accommodate the new patients and the primary care physicians in the area. Sometimes they say it's a little difficult to get into us. So we're doing our best right now to make sure that we have open time, but also allocate enough time for each patient. So I think now I might just be two weeks out, which I think is very reasonable. And if you're not getting through, if you're not getting the appointment you want, then always ask for the practice manager. He is on the ball. He aims to please. And, you know, he knows that these issues are important. And he wants them to get them treated just as much as we do, which is actually really amazing to have someone on the business side want so much for the medical side. But just give us a call, and we'd be happy to meet your needs. 814-877-5700 is the office line.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.